From 90.9 WBUR, I'm Indira Lakshmanan. This is Radio Boston. Coming up, it's the first day of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Senator Bernie Sanders spoke to his supporters today, but they weren't happy with his message.
We have got to elect Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine.
Also today, Congressman Michael Capuano on how the Democrats plan to beat Trump in November.
One of my fears is that a lot of Democrats may think that he's so far out of the box that this will be an easy election. And I think that is dead wrong.
Plus, why are Massachusetts government employees on an Islamic State hit list? Governor Baker says he doesn't think anyone's at risk, but he doesn't know how or why their names ended up there.
It's a sprinkling across what I would describe as a state government generally. If there is a unifying theme to those names at this point in time, we don't know what it is.
All that coming up on Radio Boston. First, the news.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Indira Lakshmanan. Last week, the Republicans rocked and rolled their way through Cleveland, and this week we're off to the land of cheesesteaks and the Liberty Bell, Philadelphia, where the Democratic National Convention kicks off tonight. Today's theme is United Together. New England is well represented at the festivities. Massachusetts Congressman Joe Kennedy will introduce Senator Elizabeth Warren, who speaks tonight. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders called on his supporters to vote for Hillary Clinton, and he was met with boos. Sometime tonight, before First Lady Michelle Obama addresses the convention, our own Boston Mayor Marty Walsh will speak in primetime. We are going to speak with Mayor Walsh in a moment, but first we're joined by WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks, who's covering the convention this week for us. Hi, Anthony.
Hello, Indira. Nice to hear you.
Good to hear your voice. So tell us, you thought you got all your excitement out of your system last week in Cleveland, but it seems not to be true. Let's start with the latest news. Bernie Sanders addressed his supporters today. He urged them to support Hillary Clinton, but he was met with a storm of boos. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, it's really something. So it was a raucous speech, and in many ways, this was a very standard Bernie Sanders stump speech where he talked about his movement and everything that his campaign had accomplished. But then toward the end, he sort of said to his listeners, his followers, you know, we've got to defeat Donald Trump, and that means supporting Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine. Here's the response that he got.
We have got to elect Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine.
Well, that is pretty shocking.
Yeah, pretty dramatic. They booed at the idea of voting for Hillary Clinton. So, Indira, I think it's going to be really interesting tonight to see what happens. I mean, unlike Ted Cruz's refusal to endorse Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders has endorsed Hillary Clinton. Let's be clear about that. And he's going to double down on it tonight. If he gets booed in the convention hall, it's going to be a pretty bizarre irony. And obviously, it's going to play against the script that the Democrats would very much like to adhere to. That is party unity.
Well, their whole theme tonight is officially United Together. And it doesn't sound very united. I'm struck that Bernie Sanders has done the upstanding, upright thing for the party. It's a total mirror image. You referred to Ted Cruz, but Bernie has done the opposite, and he's been met with boos anyway. It just seems like you can't win here.
It's really strange. And the folks, Hillary Clinton's campaign people are, you know, trying really hard today to make the point that this convention is going to stand in stark contrast to what happened in Cleveland last week. They're talking about hope. They're talking about optimism. And they're talking about what Bernie Sanders is going to say today. Here's Robbie Mook, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, speaking to us earlier today.
Senator Bernie Sanders has already endorsed Secretary Clinton. He is coming to double down on that endorsement and unite the party to make sure she wins. That's not what we saw from Senator Ted Cruz last week.
Well, you know, of course, as we talked about, he got the same response that Ted Cruz got from the other side of the bench. But all right, well, we will be talking with a Bernie Sanders delegate later on in the show. But I want to hear from you. You were at the Massachusetts delegate breakfast this morning. What did you hear from them about this theme of party unity?
Well, lots of support, enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton. I mean, especially from Democratic office holders. I mean, I heard from Attorney General Laura Healey, Mayor Marty Walsh. I know you're going to be talking to him soon. Newton Mayor Seti Warren. These are all sort of Democratic Party regulars who spoke glowingly of Clinton and their support for her. And they really tried to drive home this point that the party is united. But there were also Sanders delegates who suggested that this isn't quite the love fest that the sort of the Democratic establishment would like it to be. And they remain very much committed to Sanders and skeptical of Clinton. So here's J. Michael Gilbreath. He's a member of the Wayland Democratic Town Committee, a Bernie Sanders supporters. He says he will support Clinton, but reluctantly. Here's what he said.
I think in the end it will be united. I don't necessarily believe that Bernie will be able to bring along all of his supporters.
And what about you personally? Will you be able to full-heartedly vote for Hillary Clinton in November?
I will be supporting Hillary Clinton in November. I will do what I can to support the campaign, but I won't necessarily be a truly enthusiastic supporter of Mrs. Clinton.
All right. Well, Anthony, we will hear more about that as we go on in the show. I want to hear what are delegates telling you about Senator Tim Kaine, Clinton's choice for a running mate?
Well, in general, I'd say it's really, really positive. But again, it depends who you talk to. Most of Clinton's supporters that I spoke to really like him. They say that he's real. He comes from an important swing state. He compliments Clinton and that he has roots in the Midwest and might be able to court some of those working class white male voters in states like Michigan and Ohio. But of course, there's disappointment among some Sanders supporters that Kaine isn't sufficiently progressive. In the past, he's supported global trade deals like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, for example. In general, he's a lot more conservative than they like. So you hear both. But overall, I think it's generally positive among the delegates.
All right. Well, let's talk about the 20,000 Democratic National Committee emails that were hacked and released over the weekend, showing that some DNC officials were seeking to undermine Sanders during the primaries. DNC Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz was forced to step down. She now won't have a role at the convention. You know, it strikes me that Democrats mocked Republicans for all the controversies that came up last week, and they promised to be the convention of sanity. Do they have to eat their words now?
Well, that remains to be seen. We'll see if this sort of dominates all week. There's no question that this is a storyline they would rather not be talking about today, but they sort of have to. One of the things you hear from Bernie Sanders supporters is they say this email dump didn't tell us anything we didn't already know. They had spent months complaining that the DNC was being unfair to Sanders for a whole variety of reasons. And, I heard from delegates who remain really shocked that right up until just a few hours ago, Debbie Wasserman Schultz was going to be gaveling the convention into order. Late this afternoon, we learned that she wasn't going to be. She's resigning from the DNC. Now she has no role at all in the convention. So because if she had, we were talking about boos a moment ago, I think you would have heard lots of boos, because she, by the way, was booed off the stage earlier today in Philadelphia when she appeared before her own Florida delegation. She was literally booed off the stage.
All right. So this hack is also interesting in and of itself. And intelligence officials are putting out there that the hack, the originators seem to be Russians, that there might be some link to Vladimir Putin and the Russian government, perhaps trying to give a boost to Donald Trump and to hurt Hillary Clinton. What is the scuttlebutt that you're hearing today about that link?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, what I'm hearing is very much what you're hearing. What's interesting is we asked Robbie Mook just about what the Clinton campaign could say about that. And again, this is a story that they don't really want to have to get into. And so they sort of just referred us to the New York Times and other authoritative stories that have, journalistic outlets that have been doing stories on this and sort of shut down the questioning pretty quickly. But I don't know much more than you just outlined, that there are these allegations that, the Russians are involved in this, and are they helping Donald Trump to defeat Hillary Clinton? It's a pretty bizarre twist at this moment, I got to say.
All right. Well, Senator Elizabeth Warren will be speaking tonight. She's a, you know, big lioness from Massachusetts who a lot of people had hoped might be the VP pick. She won't be. But what do you expect her to say tonight?
Well, her job is going to be to talk about the clear choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And, you know, taking on Donald Trump has become a bit of a role that she relishes. She's really sort of embraced this attack dog role. She takes him on Twitter all the time. He calls her Pocahontas, a reference to the sort of controversy the last time she ran for the Senate about her Indian heritage. But she gives as good as she gets. And I think you're going to hear a pretty strong speech about why it's important to elect Hillary Clinton and why it's important to defeat Donald Trump. That's going to be her role in a big way tonight.
All right. We are going to be hearing a lot more from you tomorrow. You'll give us the latest update throughout the week. WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Indira. Thank you.
Now, to give us a preview of tonight's address, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is joining us live from Philadelphia. Welcome, Mayor Walsh. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me tonight.
So, Mayor, I want to ask you first, what issues are you going to focus on tonight?
Really on the working family, talking about, you know, the importance of electing Secretary Clinton to the presidency and the impact she'll have on working family and people that are looking, you know, working two jobs, people, students and seniors and workers facing unemployment that need to find employment. So I want to touch a little bit upon those issues.
Now, I understand you're also going to speak about your personal story tonight. Tell us.
Yeah, I'm going to tell a little bit about my personal story, about how I got to where I was in my life. And I think I'm looking forward to addressing the convention, the delegates. It's an honor. It's such a great honor to be able to be on that stage in front of, you know, the delegates in the hall, but the entire country, and talking about the importance of why I believe Hillary Clinton is going to be the next president and should be the next president.
Now, your personal story also involves, we have read about being a recovering alcoholic and that story of overcoming that and becoming a politician. Give us a little bit of a preview of that.
Yeah, I talk a little bit about, I mean, anyone who's in recovery knows that, you know, second chance is a big part of recovery, and I'm going to talk about that, about, you know, not get too deep into it, but talk about, you know, kind of where I've come and where I'm going.
All right. So some inspirational messages there, too. I'm struck that you're one of fewer than a dozen U.S. mayors who were chosen to speak at the convention. Why is Boston being highlighted?
Well, you know, Boston is a great city, and it's always been a world leader and certainly on a national stage, but also in the world. And I don't know the exact reason. You'd have to talk to Secretary Clinton about that, the Clinton administration. But it's, you know, it's an honor. I mean, it's an honor to have Boston on a stage like that.
We were talking earlier with Anthony Brooks about the leak over the weekend of the DNC emails showing that some party officials were conspiring against Bernie Sanders. And all of that, of course, casts a shadow over the start of the convention before the speeches have even begun. I wonder, are you concerned about Sanders supporters being spoilers in the same way that Republicans who opposed Donald Trump caused an embarrassment for him last week?
No, I think that, you know, Senator Sanders will unite the party tonight. I think he had a conversation earlier. I'm not sure exactly what happened with his supporters, and I think that, you know, he's a man of integrity, and I'm sure that he will talk about uniting the party a lot better than Senator Cruz did, because Senator Cruz seemed like he laid the foundation down for his 2020 run, and you know, Senator Sanders has a real chance tonight to do that. And you know, at the end of the day, I look at what Hillary Clinton stands for and what Donald Trump stands for. And the Bernie Sanders support, which is very deep and very, very loyal, and I commend them for that. You know, Donald Trump will take the policies that everyone's concerned about and reverse them the other way. And I think that there's a real opportunity with Secretary Clinton. You know, she was a progressive 8 years ago, and she's still a progressive. And people, you know, it seems to have been lost in the shuffle over the last 8 years. But certainly the values she stands for and the ideals she stands for are a lot of what Senator Sanders' support is saying, and I think there's a real opportunity tonight. And you know, and it's unfortunate what happened with the party and how the week started. At least yesterday, you know. But today's about uniting. Today's about moving forward. And you know, certainly I think there's going to be plenty of opportunity to discuss party politics, both Democrats and Republicans. This is the same stuff that Trump was complaining about for the last 9 months of his party not being with him. And last week in the convention, it showed that the party's not strongly united behind him. Many governors and senators and congressmen and legislators from Massachusetts were missing in that hall. And they're not missing in this convention here, I'll tell you that.
Well, let me ask you, because you mentioned the whole notion of progressives and Bernie Sanders supporters. Hillary Clinton announced Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, who really is a moderate in the party, as her vice president pick over the weekend. Many progressives, labor leaders, people in Massachusetts were hoping Senator Elizabeth Warren might have been chosen. Is this a missed opportunity for Hillary Clinton to align herself with the left flank of the party?
I don't know. I think she's there. I mean, I think, you know, Hillary Clinton's running for the president of the United States of America, all the states and all the backgrounds and people with different views. And I think that Senator Kaine is a good, very good choice. You know, he came through the ranks. He was a mayor. He was a governor, sitting United States senator. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there with Senator Kaine as they continue to build out their team. And after they get elected in November, I think that there's a real opportunity there.
Are there specific proposals that you were looking to hear from Hillary Clinton and from Tim Kaine, especially proposals that would help cities like Boston?
Well, I mean, I think that they're talking a lot about income inequality and infrastructure and equality for women, and I think those are issues that I've been focused on as mayor. There's also the issue of preschool, pre-kindergarten. That's something that's very important to me in the city of Boston. So there's a lot of issues that we line up on, a lot of issues that we've been talking about that Hillary Clinton's been talking about. Addiction's another one. I mean, Hillary Clinton was the first candidate, to my knowledge, that spoke about addiction and how it impacts America. And other candidates followed through with that, Jeb Bush and Chris Christie, people like that. But, you know, that's a big issue. That doesn't matter. That's not a Democrat or Republican issue. That's not conservative or liberal issue. That is an issue that affects every American across the board, potentially. So I think there's a lot that in the platform that affects our city and our state.
We recently spoke with you from Beijing when you were attending the U.S.-China Climate Summit, and Boston is going to be the host for that summit next year. So I'm wondering, are there specifics on climate change that you want to hear from Hillary Clinton?
Well, I can tell you this. It'll make a big difference in that summit, depending on who's in the corner office. And if it's Donald Trump, you know, I think that the conversation would be much different than it would be with a Clinton presidency. And I think that's something that Secretary Clinton's been talking about as well, the climate and climate change and how to deal with it on a national level and a global level. And I'm not hearing much about that out of Trump's mouth.
You had a press conference this morning at South Station before you left for Philly with Senate President Stan Rosenberg, Mayor Dan Rivera, Senator Linda Dorsina-Forey. I'm wondering about the feeling among Massachusetts delegates going into tonight, and you yourself are going to be speaking to Massachusetts delegates in about 10 minutes. What is your message for them?
There was a great feeling on the train on the way down yesterday. People were really excited about it, getting together and talking about the importance of moving our country forward. There was some Bernie Sanders supporters on there as well, and it was just a real good united feeling, and we all felt good about coming down to Philadelphia. You know, we're calling it Boston and Philly. It's a great feel, and, you know, often thinking about, you know, I was at, you know, Independence Hall today in front of it, thinking about when John Adams left Boston and left Braintree, actually, in Boston to come to Philadelphia to sign the Declaration of Independence and thinking about creating this great nation. And that's what we're talking about. We're about continuing the great tradition of our country. You know, the Trump people are talking about making America great again. I don't know. America has always been great. And when they try to use the buzzwords, I just don't understand exactly what it is. I think, you know, the beauty about the Democratic Party, we're a party made up of different philosophies and different thinking. But at the end of the day, we come together because we know what's right for the country. And what's right for the country is the Clinton presidency.
All right, that's Boston Mayor Marty Walsh joining us from the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. He will be speaking in prime time tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, Mayor.
Thank you very much, and I'll look forward to talking to you probably before the week's over.
Absolutely. All right. Stay with us. Coming up, we'll check in with Congressman Michael Capuano from the Democratic National Convention. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, and this is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Indira Lakshmanan. We're continuing our coverage now of the Democratic National Convention kicking off today in Philadelphia. Earlier this afternoon from the Convention Center, we spoke with U.S. Congressman Michael Capuano. He represents the 7th District of Massachusetts, and he was an early superdelegate for Hillary Clinton. The GOP convention last week was riven by conflict in Cleveland, an open floor revolt, allegations of plagiarism by Donald Trump's wife, and a non-endorsement of Trump from runner-up Ted Cruz. The Democrats promised that theirs, in contrast, would be an orderly show of unity, but they're already coping with a scandal before the curtain even goes up tonight. Democratic National Committee emails leaked over the weekend reveal some party officials tried to sabotage Bernie Sanders' run for president. The party chairwoman was forced to announce her resignation on the eve of the convention. So we started by asking Congressman Capuano how the Democratic Party can recover from this latest embarrassment.
Well, I think it's already started to recover when Ms. Schultz decided to step down. Look, they made a mistake. They got caught at it, which I think is, I'm glad they got caught at it. The party should not be been involved in these things. And I think that okay, it's done. I hope that people now involved with the party going forward will understand that we meant what we said when the party should be a neutral arbiter. I think that they shouldn't be involved in open primaries, and I think it's going to be a long time till you see anything like that again. And I don't think this is going to help, but what everything's said and done, I do think it's a speed bump, not a mountain.
Well, a challenge for this convention is going to be to present Hillary Clinton, who's one of the most famous, but also in a lot of people's eyes, divisive figures in U.S. politics of the last quarter century in a fresh new light. How do you think the convention should be going about trying to accomplish that?
Well, my hope is first and foremost, we have to make sure that our party is together moving forward. That includes the Sanders people and anyone else who has any discomfort with Mrs. Clinton. Look, I don't think most of us look for the perfect candidate when we vote for people running for office. I think we look for the best candidate we can get, and especially now, the primaries are over. Hillary Clinton won. It's done. I think every Democrat now has to look in the mirror and say, okay, maybe I don't agree with her on these things, but compared to Donald Trump, this is the easiest choice I've had in my lifetime. And that being the case, okay, moving forward, let's get our family on the same page, at least in the same chapter. And I think that's going to happen. I think it's already started to happen and will continue to happen. And then go out and maybe then we have to convince people who are not necessarily party advocates. That's where the real election is, and that's where it will be over the next several months.
Well, Hillary Clinton's strength, one could argue, is her, you know, huge amount of experience. She's been Secretary of State. She's been Senator. She's been First Lady. She's done a lot of things in her life. So, I mean, I see it as you've got this establishment candidate running in an election, a sort of status quo candidate who's running in a change election. And how do you sort of help people see the value of someone with a lot of experience as a Democrat, if you value that experience, even though it's a context where voters want change?
Well, I think voters always want change. I've been involved in a lot of elections. I have never been involved in an election where people said, you know what, everything is just fine. We don't want to change anything. And I think that's no different here than any other time. People who just want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, they're going to vote for Trump, and they'll, you know, if he wins, they will find out what that means. I think more voters are adults and mature that understand change is nothing wrong with it. That's a good thing to want. The question is, what type of change, what degree of change, and what are the candidates that are running that can win? Of the ones who are running, which one do I think comes closest to my definition of the term? Not perfection, not agree with me 100% of the time. And I think, you know, given all that, I think in the final analysis, sure, we want change. And I'm not going to argue that Donald Trump doesn't offer a greater degree of change. I think his change is too dramatic, too extreme. I don't think the average American voter will support that degree and that extremity of so-called change.
Some die-hard loyalists to Bernie Sanders are still bitter about the outcome of the primary season, even though Senator Sanders himself has endorsed Hillary Clinton. Now these leaked DNC emails are making them feel even worse. What does the Clinton campaign need to do this week in Philadelphia to get them on board?
I think most importantly, to respect their differences and respect their viewpoint. Look, I've won elections and I've lost elections, and winning is always better. But I think that the worst possible thing you can be is a sore winner. I don't think Hillary Clinton has been that. I don't think she will be that. I don't think her supporters are that. I understand where the diehard Sanders supporters are coming from. But I also know that when they wake up tomorrow, next week, next month, and they look in the mirror, cannot imagine any of them can vote for Donald Trump and say that that's somehow advancing the agenda they claim to so strongly support.
Hillary Clinton, of course, rolled out her choice for vice president this past weekend, Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia. How much of a difference do you think a vice presidential candidate actually makes? And what do you think about Tim Kaine? Is he a net positive for the Democratic ticket?
I think he's a net positive, but a lot of that has to do with I don't think that vice presidential candidates make that much difference. People vote for the top of the ticket, not the second person. I think the second person can drag you down if they are a negative. I think we saw it a few years ago with Sarah Palin. We've seen it in the past with other candidates. 95% of the people will be voting for either Hillary or Donald. They will not be voting for Tim Kaine or Mike Pence.
Let me ask you, Donald Trump was shown in several polls to have gotten a bump out of his convention last week. Of course, this is typical. Most candidates do get some sort of a lift in the polls out of their conventions. There's a new CNN poll that shows Hillary Clinton with 45%, trailing Donald Trump with 48%. Do you think that she's going to be able to make up that ground this week?
Yes, I do. I, as you just said, that's a bump out of the convention. Hell, I watch more of the Republican convention this year than I've ever watched a Republican convention in my life. And because, let's be honest, I mean, Donald Trump, I certainly don't want him as president, but he's got some entertainment value. You can't deny the fact that a lot of us see Donald Trump as a very entertaining figure in the entire Republican convention with Ted Cruz and what crazy thing do we think Trump might say next. Those are attractive things as far as, you know, trying to watch a TV set. At the same time, when everything's said and done, I think the bump coming out of the Democratic convention will be comparable, and that's when the real work starts for all of us.
So tonight we're going to hear from two of the highest profile New Englanders in Democratic politics, of course, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont himself and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, who some people said might have been on the short list for Hillary Clinton's choice for VP. What do you think we can expect to hear from them tonight?
I fully expect that their speeches will be exactly what they have been saying for the last several weeks now, is that, yes, there are some differences. I think Bernie will focus on some of the differences, maybe a lot more than Senator Warren. But when everything's said and done, we are more together than we are apart. And I think both of them will make strong cases to go vote for Hillary Clinton.
I want to ask you about the Massachusetts delegation breakfast this morning. What was the talk about? What was the chat? I'm sure people are excited at the beginning of a convention, but also there must have been some sense of frustration over this DNC leak that some people are linking to Russian hackers.
Yeah, like everybody else, of course, you know, you have a whole bunch of political activists in one place. You're going to talk about politics. And, you know, look, nobody's going to pretend that we like what has happened. It was wrong, and, you know, it's unfortunate. But it's not the big deal. Somebody made a mistake, and they paid for it with their job. And it's not good. No one's going to defend it. All that being said, the next question is, how do we move forward from here? And it's actually pretty easy. I think we come up with a new leader for the party, and we get through this convention and get Hillary Clinton elected. That's the most important thing we're focused on, and that was most of the discussion at the breakfast this morning. I spoke at that breakfast, and my topic pretty much was really focusing on the future and how Donald Trump is not a pushover candidate. One of my fears is that a lot of Democrats may think that he's so far out of the box that this will be an easy election. And I think that is dead wrong. I think this is going to be a difficult election. Donald Trump has tapped into a feeling across this country that is a little ugly at times, a little bit difficult, but it's real. And for anyone to deny that real emotional, gut-wrenching feeling that he brings out in people may not turn into a victory is a big mistake. I think we have to go into this election believing, I do, that this is going to be a very tough election and we have to work very hard to win it.
So don't rest on your laurels and really be alert. Don't assume a win. It sounds like you're warning Democrats in Massachusetts
very, very much
and all
so.
Over.
And Very much so. And again, one of my fears is that because Donald Trump is so far out of the mainstream, I think some Democrats might be tempted to simply say, look, nobody's going to vote for that crazy guy. And Maya says, well, I think you need to get out of your little bubble and go talk to some other people. I've heard way too many of my friends mention that they might consider it. And a lot of people, I think, are considering it quietly. And that, to me, whenever you run an election presuming you're going to win, that's a recipe for disaster.
Well, that's partly the, sort of, even if it's a lack of enthusiasm, the interest in Donald Trump is partly among people who just don't like Hillary Clinton. And my last question for you really is a personal one about Hillary Clinton, the woman who you know. A lot of people have said that Hillary Clinton is very different as a candidate from how she is as an official when she's actually in office or actually doing a job. She herself has said it. I covered her for 5 years as a candidate in 2008 and for 4 years as a Secretary of State, and I observed that. So tell us about your observations of her as a person. You know, is she different from the image that she gives out to the public?
I don't know that different is the word that I'd use. I think less guarded is the word that I would use. I mean, you know, look, her and her husband have been through more public scrutiny than any two people I have ever met or could ever imagine. And having been a person who's lived in the bubble to a certain extent, I understand that. I'm a little different. First of all, I haven't lived in that degree of bubble. And second of all, I don't really care about it that much, and I just let it all hang out. But that gets me in trouble on a regular basis. Hillary is a lot more guarded than many people expect. In private, she's less guarded, and I think that's a good thing. I think people want to see a bit of your soul. It is difficult for the Clintons to do. I think that if you want to be president, you have to be more guarded. And number one. Number two is, I think when everything's said and done, I mean, yeah, people want to feel comfortable with their candidate. I think they will feel reasonably comfortable with Hillary. I don't see how they could possibly feel comfortable with Donald Trump. I mean, I laugh at people say, I'd like to have a beer with him. It's like, no, you wouldn't, because you'd end up paying for it. and he have a good chance of him calling you names or, you know, poking you in the eye. And how is that fun?
So you think she's going to let more of herself show in this in her speech this week?
I hope so. I think so. And I think not just of herself, but also of her vision for this country. I mean, she's got a new ad out now showing children watching Donald Trump, some of his more extreme statements. I think it's a fantastic ad. I think it shows not just what Hillary thinks. She thinks through the eyes of our children and our future. But I think it also shows her vision. She cares what children will think about this country and about the adults who lead it. And not just children. I think it obviously speaks to a much deeper part of all of us. So I think the answer is she will show more of herself. And I think just as importantly, she'll show more of her vision for this country.
Congressman Michael Capuano, thanks so much for joining us from the Democratic Convention in Philly.
Thanks, Indira. Nice speaking with you.
So we just heard from a Clinton superdelegate. Now we're going to turn to a Sanders supporter. Senator Bernie Sanders spoke to his delegates earlier this afternoon at the convention in Philadelphia. He urged party unity, but some of his delegates responded with a chant showing they just weren't ready. Joining us now from Philadelphia is Sanders delegate and Massachusetts Connecticut State Campaign Director for Sanders' presidential run, Paul Feeney. Feeney is also the legislative director for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local Union 2222. Paul, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me on. This is great.
Absolutely. So, Paul, you were at that speech this afternoon by Bernie Sanders. What was it like to be there?
The atmosphere was electric. I tell you, Senator Sanders has no shortage of passionate supporters. And, you know, we've seen that over this past year, the crowds that he's brought out to his rallies, a lot of young people, a lot of folks that have felt disenfranchised from the process. And, you know, to see them not only in the same room in Philadelphia now, but just to look around that room and to think that they traveled thousands of miles to come here and support Senator Sanders still, even at this late time in the presidential primary cycle is incredible. And it's a testament not only to Senator Sanders and the work that he's done over his career, but really to his message and the values and ideals that he's been talking about across this country.
Now, some of his supporters booed when he called on them to support Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine. Were you one of those loyalists who booed his call for party unity?
I was certainly not. There was a few boos, and I think that was obvious to folks that were watching or listening. You know, look, this is tough. Primaries are tough. Democracy is messy at times, and you know, when you get into a tough primary like we just had over the last year, You know, these things happen, and it's tough for people to come around. I think there's a kind of moments of transition, and there's a lot of folks on the Sanders team and supporters that are, you know, kind of going through a tough couple of days here, trying to figure out where they're going to be going forward now that Senator Sanders is going to speak tonight. We'll call the roll tomorrow, and really this part of the primary is over. You know, the Democratic Party is going to have their nominee. It's obvious it's not going to be Senator Sanders, and I think that's tough for some people to take that put in so many hours and so much time. The difference with the folks on the Sanders team and the Sanders supporters throughout this country is the amount of hours and just volunteer activity that they put in for this campaign. I've been working on campaigns for over 20 years, and I've never seen anything like it. People were dedicated. They gave up their time. They gave up their homes. They brought people in. They brought in staffers to live there. They made phone calls. They knocked on doors. You know, so this is going to be a couple of transition days, but I think at the end of the day, you'll find that despite a few people booing when Senator Sanders spoke about Secretary Clinton today, the majority of people here in Philadelphia this week understand that we need to unify, we need to come together, we have a clear and simple choice, and we need to do what we can to elect a Democratic nominee.
Well, let me ask you, Paul, because there were these hacked Democratic National Committee emails that were leaked over the weekend showing some Democratic Party leaders tried to undermine Sanders' presidential bid. Sanders made only a passing reference to the disgraced DNC chairwoman, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was forced to step down last night. He indicated that he has moved on. So I want to ask you, should his supporters move on, too?
Well, I think Senator Sanders, it's been obvious over the last year that he is a person of the highest integrity in class. And, you know, for him to do that and say that and you know, really have the intestinal fortitude to go out and say that publicly, to say we can move on, despite the fact that he just ran a tough primary the last year, it's just a testament to who he is as a person. And do I think the supporters should move on? I do, but I also think that we need to make sure that doesn't happen again and that people are held accountable. What we saw with those emails is atrocious. It's something that you know, we've been talking about for the last year. Supporters across the country have felt that there was not an impartial party, and we saw it in those emails. But I think, you know, as Congressman Capuano pointed to earlier at our delegation breakfast, you know, I think they are taking the steps necessary. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is out. I think that's a good first step. But, you know, we really need to move on. We need to make sure that we come together this week and elect a Democrat into the White House. But those emails, it's just, you know, there was obviously a leadership problem in that DNC, and I think it's important now for Sanders supporters to become a part of the process, to stay engaged in the party, to make sure that doesn't happen again.
You are also a member of the Rules Committee at the DNC, which met this Saturday before the convention. A big item was this proposal to eliminate superdelegates, who are, of course, the voting members of the DNC who are not selected by primaries and caucuses. Here's Senator Sanders this afternoon talking about Democratic superdelegates.
And by the way, while it is true, we did not get many superdelegates, we won 46% of the pledged delegates.
That proposal to eliminate the superdelegates was rejected by the Rules Committee on Saturday. I want to hear from you. Do you think there are any chances in future conventions that you could eventually get rid of superdelegates, which were seen by some Sanders supporters to have swayed the election towards Hillary Clinton?
I do. I think we've taken a path towards that. I think we've taken a significant path towards that this past weekend on the Rules Committee. You know, Senator Sanders and his supporters for over the past year, we've been talking about this. The fact that we were going into cities and towns, communities all over this country, engaging new voters and having to answer to an 18-year-old voter for the first time why there's already votes cast for somebody else in this election in his state or her state, why their vote doesn't matter as much as a superdelegate, an insider in the party. You know, people don't think about politics, they feel politics. And you know, that's tough when people feel like the game is already rigged against them. The superdelegate system needs reform. We would have liked to have gotten rid of it completely on Saturday at the Rules Committee. We didn't have the votes to do that. But I think at the end of the day, because of Senator Sanders and because of the cooperation with the Clinton campaign, we came out with a great plan to put together a unity commission to kind of look at this, to examine what's worked in the past, and to continue to do that, and fix what hasn't worked. And I think the superdelegate system is definitely on the chopping block and needs to be fixed going forward.
All right, well, let's talk turkey on the issues here. How has Bernie Sanders managed to affect the Democratic platform this year, and what do you want to hear out of Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine's mouths when they speak this week that will really convince you that they have absorbed some of the messages from this political revolution, this movement that Sanders said he was leading?
There's certainly a movement and certainly a political revolution, and I'm happy to be here in Philadelphia, where I think we're going to talk about the most progressive platform that the Democratic Party has ever adopted here. This is something that we've been talking about for a year, that this campaign wasn't built on personality. It was built on principles. It was built on values and ideals, and those values and ideals are Democratic values and ideals. It's not a radical idea, the things that we've been talking about. So, you know, we were able to, because of Senator Sanders and because of his supporters and the millions of people across this country that are now engaged in this process, we're able to move that platform to a progressive place. You know, it's certainly not an ideal one, but that's politics. That's what you do. You get together and you figure out, you know, kind of what works for the majority of people. So I think we're in a good place. I'm happy that that platform is being adopted this week. I know Secretary Clinton has adopted some of the positions that Senator Sanders was pushing for over the last year, so I think that's a victory, and we need to make sure that we continue to push for economic justice, for affordable health care, affordable education, those sorts of things. So I think we're going to hear a lot about that this week, not only from Senator Sanders, but also from Secretary Clinton.
All right. Well, in the few moments we have left, a last question. What do you anticipate Bernie Sanders is going to say tonight to rouse up the convention? And as we talked about, he's repeatedly said that his run was a revolution, a movement. How do you see that revolution going forward into November and beyond?
Well, I think that's exactly what we're going to hear from Senator Sanders tonight. You know, when he set out to run for the Democratic nominee for president, he set out to make this party better. He set out to make the Democratic Party stronger, not only for this November, but for years to come. And to do that, you have to set in place a movement. You have to have a revolution. He's going to get up tonight, and he's going to talk to his supporters and people throughout this country and say that we can coalesce, we can get behind these values and ideals, and we can push not only from outside the party, which has been done for years, but now within the Democratic Party. In times like this, I told the Rules Committee the other day, you can get bitter or you can get better. And I think we've gotten better as a party. We've got a better nominee because of it. And I think Senator Sanders tonight will hit a home run and get this crowd fired up and ready to win in November.
Paul Feeney is a Sanders delegate from Massachusetts, and he was state director of the Sanders campaign for Connecticut and Massachusetts. Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Stay with us. Coming up, we're going to be talking about what happens when Massachusetts government employees find themselves on an Islamic State hit list. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, and this is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Indira Lakshmanan. Last week, more than 100 Massachusetts government employees, most of them anonymous civil servants, learned their names appeared in an unexpected place, an Islamic State hit list. ISIS cyber affiliates have released a number of similar hit lists in other states in recent months, naming police officers, county board members, even ordinary citizens, seemingly chosen at random, along with messages urging followers to target those individuals. Governor Charlie Baker says the Massachusetts list, which contains names of 138 state employees, mostly in fiscal, budgetary, and human resources departments, does not pose a credible threat to anyone on the list, and he notes that no one on any previous list has been killed. Still, at least one state official whose name appeared on the list tells the Boston Globe his local police department is providing him with some extra security as a precaution. For more on why ISIS affiliates are making hit lists of government employees and ordinary citizens, and whether these pose a real threat, we turn now to Max Abrams, professor of political science at Northeastern University and a terrorism analyst. Professor Abrams, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us, what is the history of these hit lists? And do we know how many people in the U.S. and around the world have been targeted?
Well, they seem to be growing in popularity. I know that a hit list came out around 2015, but over the summer, they seem to have, you know, really picked up. I don't know the exact number. I doubt anybody does, but basically, the number is huge. So we're not talking about hundreds. We're not talking about thousands. We're talking about tens of thousands of people. In general, the message that I want to impress on listeners is that these kinds of hit lists really aren't that scary. I agree with your lead-in that we don't know of a single person on one of these lists who has actually been targeted by Islamic State. The information that's provided is very basic. I mean, there's so much information online that, you know, absolutely anybody could gather. So they include things like people's names, where they live, maybe their phone number. You know, most of this stuff can be gleaned from a phone book.
Well, Max, you're right that a lot of this information is publicly available, but at the same time, to specifically take that publicly available information and put it onto a hit list, encouraging people, lone wolves, to go out there and attack individuals, I mean, even if you may agree with Governor Baker that the Massachusetts list doesn't pose a immediate or credible threat, how do you reassure people who are on the list not to worry?
Sure. I mean, I can understand why somebody would be worried to see that they're on an Islamic State hit list, but that doesn't mean that their worry is really justified. So the first thing I would point out is that not a single person from this list has ever actually been targeted. When you look at who's on the list and what their information is, you get the drift of how indiscriminate, you know, this list is. So these people, they're not necessarily high-level people. We're not talking about, you know, for example, military generals and where they live. You know, people, you know, working in human resources, teachers, dentists. It's just whatever information they could find. And this is really consistent with Islamic State's overall strategy, which is to try to scare everybody. You know, this is a group, when it commits an attack, it's not that selective. It's not that specific. It doesn't just go after high-value targets or important symbols. This is a group that wants to spread fear and would be happy to attack anybody, and that's represented in these lists.
Well, if the goal of this ISIS affiliate and the others who've published lists is to sow fear in the population, I mean, that is part of the idea of terrorist groups, to create terror. But don't these lists also, to some extent, tie up law enforcement resources? They have to investigate these lists. They have to notify people who are on them. They have to act on any credible threats. I mean, couldn't it sort of be a smokescreen for ISIS as well?
I can understand how Islamic State thinks that it gets some utility out of these lists. It does sow fear, and that is an immediate objective of terrorist groups. And maybe, yeah, it could drain local law enforcement resources. But I would encourage law enforcement not to invest too heavily against this and not to waste their resources. Again, these names are chosen pretty much arbitrarily. So I understand, you know, I read an article saying that somebody who was included on the list got a patrol car to come by his house just to check up on him. These kinds of countermeasures, I don't think that that's necessarily a good investment.
Of course, it's easy to say that that's not a good investment until one person on that list might actually be targeted by a lone wolf. And what it makes me think of is the link between these kinds of appeals directed at ISIS sympathizers to the recent so-called lone wolf attacks. For example, there was this Syrian suicide bomber who killed himself and injured 15 others in southern Germany this weekend. How do you see the link?
You know, if it is true that the Islamic State threat is by no means contained, and in a way, it's more dangerous than ever in terms of inspiring Islamic State attacks around the world, including, you know, these lone wolf attackers. But these lone wolf attackers tend to be pretty amateurish, and they're not looking to assassinate high-value people. This latest attack in Germany, for example, is sort of a classic case. The guy wasn't even bright enough to purchase a ticket in order to enter into the concert area where he wanted to strike. And so, I don't know, because he didn't think to get a ticket, he detonated it, the bomb, away from people and only killed one person, and that was himself. So I think that very often we lionize terrorists. We call them terrorist masterminds, and, you know, we talk about the sophistication of their attacks. But most of these terrorists are really not very sophisticated at all, and they often just want to kill themselves, and they would be happy to kill absolutely anybody, regardless of whether they're on some sort of a list.
Of course, one of these perhaps lone wolves, it's not clear yet whether he really was inspired by ISIS, is this man in Nice who drove the truck into a crowd of people watching Bastille Day fireworks and killed more than 90 people. There have been so many official ISIS terrorist attacks in the last few weeks, hundreds dead in Iraq, France, Afghanistan, Bangladesh, beyond. I'm wondering, do you think ISIS is lashing out because it's lost so much land in because of coalition airstrikes in the few moments we have left?
Yeah, I do subscribe to that view. I think a lot of people are confused about Islamic State because on the one hand, there are all these positive reports about how we're doing against the group in its stronghold of Iraq and in Syria. And on the other hand, the Islamic State violence seems to be bubbling over more and more internationally. I actually think that both can be true. The amount of violence that Islamic State produces in the short term around the world is not a good indication of the group's military capability.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. That's Max Abrams, professor of political science at Northeastern University, and that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Indira Lakshmanan. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.